Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network. And I am joined here on Friday, May 22nd, by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
Oh, Dave, I'm good. May's a tough month for me. I've got son-in-law's birthday, son's birthday, daughter's birthday, wife's birthday, and Mother's Day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
It's tough. It is tough. It is just one constant flow of presents and birthday cakes and crap. Fun though.
I've got both of my kids, their birthdays are June 7th and June 15th. So it's just right. And they're just far enough apart that like, if I do a joint birthday, one of them's pissed off, but you know, close that I'm like, I don't want to do two. What are we doing here, guys?
Dave.
Yeah.
Do you think there might be future problems with my grandchildren who were born on the, they're 2 years apart and they're born on the same day?
That's a problem.
Oh, right. That's now the, they think this is the only way it's done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they're 3 and 5. They're about to turn 4 and 6. When they get older, they're going to go WTF. That's what they're going to say to their mom.
They're going to,
why don't I get my own effing birthday?
Wow. Wow.
No, they would never say that, but it'd be kind of fun if they did.
Do you think they should have lied and made the next one, like, just like said you were born the day after? It doesn't matter.
You know, eventually they'll see their birth certificate at some point in their life.
I guess that's
or
true.
Or something. I mean, my mom, speaking of which, was funny. She lied on her driver's license about her age. She came through the Depression and she always was, and then, you know, went to college, went to Berkeley. Always paranoid about people knowing how old she was because she was older. And she lied. She lied on my birth certificate. And she lied on her driver's license.
Did she lie to your father?
No, he knew. But when I was born, my brother was born. Then 4 years later, I was born. She was the same age on both birth certificates.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. I don't know. I guess in the 50s and early 60s, you can pull off that kind of crap.
It's like a time traveler movie.
It was amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
We have a lot to talk about today.
We do, Dave.
Sure. We're going to talk. So this basketball recruiting class, it's not done. I mean, I won't say it's finalized. I don't think it's completely finished. But we're here now, you know, Friday, May 22nd. Summer workouts start soon, right?
Yeah.
They start usually like June. A month. Yeah. So we're, we're kind of nearing completion here. We're going to talk about kind of where things stand, how we're thinking about this transfer recruiting class and everything. And then we want to talk about UCLA's football recruiting. Tracy's working on a story right now that may be up sometime today. About kind of the missing pieces left in this transfer class, or not in this transfer class, in this recruiting class. So we're going to get into all that. But Tracy, we wanted to start with basketball. Basketball. The NBA. UCLA,
yeah. Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, UCLA just announced its 4 signings.
Correct. So they announced their 4 signings. That's a great place to start it off.
That's what I was thinking.
That was beautiful. I love the way you think.
it means a lot to me.
So the 4 signees were announced this week. That's Filip Jovic, Sergei Matsura. Tracy corrected me pre-podcast about his pronunciation.
Matsura.
Jalen Petty and Xavier Stink Robinson. So those are the 4 transfers that have been announced already.
Dave, where's Matsura from?
Is he Serbia or Slovenia? Or
it's Slovenia. Do you know what? You know the hometown.
Oh, Ljubljana?
That sounded so good.
You like that?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You should name your next child Ljubljana.
I should. It'd be a very nice name. So those 4 guys have been signed. So I do want to clarify, this doesn't preclude UCLA from adding additional transfers, and we will say they're still in pursuit of additional players. But this is the announcement as of now. The NBA Draft Combine ended earlier this week on the 17th. Is that Sunday? What day was that?
Yes.
Sunday. Ended on Sunday. One of the major remaining irons in the fire, Tunde Yusufu, he went through the combine process. as Tracy wrote in his story this week, the latest mock drafts coming out of that event still don't have him as an obvious first rounder, let alone an obvious lottery pick. So from a dollars and cents perspective, if you are sitting at home, you know, a 40 plus year old man, particularly, you might be saying, why wouldn't you just go get the biggest check you can get at the college level? People think differently. And we're going to see on Tuesday whether or not he decides to stay in the NBA draft or opt to return to college. We're going to see very soon because the deadline for announcing that sort of decision is mid next week. But this recruiting class, so right now for UCLA, they've landed a couple of guards in Jalen Petty and Xavier Robinson. And they've landed a couple of what I would call pretty clear fours in Jovic and Matsura. If you were paying attention coming out of last season, if you were paying attention in season, but if you were paying attention to what we identified as the main needs coming out of last year, Tracy, do you remember what positions those were? do you recall?
Dave, why don't you tell me?
They were the three and the five, Tracy.
There we go.
Now, UCLA was in position to potentially land a five, and then through some issues, was not able to grab a five in Luke Wilson, the Appalachian State center. But the three, which was when we were talking about this, what was that? It feels like years ago, 2 months ago, because we had our little debate on this show about which one we would prefer. You were taking the side of the five, and I was saying, well, no, I think they need an athletic three. So for me, that was the bigger need, because I look at the way Cronin's best teams played, and they didn't have a dominant five in like a Cody Riley or whatever. They had really good play at the, you know, three, four. You know, they had interchangeable, like essentially two through four. So I identified that as a big need. But right now, you'd have to say it doesn't look like they're, you know, well, they haven't landed one yet, and we're going to have to see on Tuesday or potentially door number three, whether they're going to land one. But that's a big, there's a big hole on this roster at that spot. There's an even, by size standpoint, there's an even bigger hole at the five. So I want to contextualize looking at this recruiting class. I actually like each of these individual pieces. Like, I think Jalen Petty is going to be a good player. I like Xavier Robinson. I think he could be a good player. I think they both have upside. I like Jovic, and I think Matsura will be fine. I don't mind any of these individual pieces. And I actually think if this was part of a roster rebuild coming straight out of the Jaime Jaquez year, like if these were four transfers, they just, you know, different names, but the same exact type of guy that they landed in, you know, going into the 2023-2024 season, I'd say, oh, wow, this is the start of a really good rebuild. You know, they're missing a couple of pieces, but I think we can get excited about this. You know, they might be a fringe tournament team, but, you know, maybe there's some upside in the future. They still need to land a post and all that kind of stuff, but there's, you know, there's room to work with here. It, you know, it's three former freshmen who are going to have 3 years to build. That's great. The big thing is, it's not 2023-24 anymore. This is going into the 2026-2027 season after three seasons that can only be described as collectively taken disappointing. And you're looking right now, again, right now, this doesn't preclude that they could add more guys, but right now you're looking at a roster that does not seem poised to do on the court a whole lot better than last year or the year before. And potentially, I mean, I think there's upside with this roster to do, you know, if everything gels and everything comes together and Jovic can play some whatever three or five, Matsura can, you know, maybe play up a little bit. Maybe you could talk yourself into this being, you know, a team that could win a game in the NCAA tournament. But that can't be, I mean, that's just at this stage, I have to imagine there is almost no patience in the fan base for anything like that sort of season. And the issue is the downside potential of a team constructed this way, where it's missing two key pieces, you know, an athletic size and length at the three, and a true five. Because right now, like, if you're looking at this roster, Tracy, who is the truest five on this roster? Xavier Booker?
No. Probably in just pure player form, Javonte Floyd.
Right. Right. So, do you think they're going to be playing Javonte Floyd 25 minutes a game?
I don't think he'd play. It would be like a real surprise. It'd be fantastic if he were actually good enough to play as a true freshman and was able to play well enough that Mick Cronin, you know, made mistakes and Mick Cronin accepted it. So I think it's very unlikely. But if you're talking about true center who can play the position, it's probably him. After that, it might be Brandon Williams. I'm not joking. I don't know why you're laughing.
I don't know why I'm laughing either.
Jovic might. There's no one who, if you're talking about size and game style, there's no one who's really a five.
Yeah.
Except Javonte Floyd. He is a five.
He's a five. So looking at the construction, the downside potential is that it doesn't come together. They're missing some key pieces. And, I mean, a team constructed this way, there's real potential of missing the tournament. And so it's a really tough spot to be in this far into kind of the second act, or whatever you want to call it, for Mick Cronin. Because, again, if you literally erase the last 3 years and you said this was the roster build coming out of the final 4 year, or not the final 4 year, but the, you know, the Pac-12 champion year with Jaime and Adem and Jalen Clark, I think there'd be like, oh, okay. All right, well, they're going to take a step back, but, you know, there's some exciting guys to build around the whole thing. But there's not going to, I mean, that's, you can't erase the last 3 years. And so, like, right now, we said it a while ago, but, like, Tunde was kind of, like, make or break, you know, boom or bust, need to do that. It's still kind of that way. It's just, it doesn't feel, I would say that the situation doesn't feel great right now about Tunde, because again, we are 5 days post NBA draft. There hasn't been an announcement yet that he's returning. All, like, if you're just reading the tea leaves from afar, this looks like a situation where a kid desperately wants to stay in the NBA draft process, like desperately wants to be a professional basketball player and doesn't really want to return to college. That's how it looks from the outside looking in. Now, could that change? Maybe. But this is a roster that needs to fill one of those missing pieces. And if it doesn't, like, the range of possibilities goes from, like, I mean, it's a wide range, but it starts at a pretty dire point at the low point.
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about whether a player in Tunde's position wants to come back, they never want to come back. These guys have been having that NBA dream since they were, you know, old enough to bounce a basketball. They didn't necessarily dream about playing in college. It's just the way they are. And when they're five stars out of high school and they've had agents, even, you know, they probably had agents even before the NIL era.
They probably had agents since they bounced the ball.
And it's in their mind, it's been all about the NBA. I mean, we all think, wow, we all love UCLA and we think everyone should love being there. North Carolina fans love North Carolina. They are of a different, complete universe. They do not say, God, to play for UCLA, that's a dream. That's just not. Are there certain colleges they'd like to play for that have some qualities that they might enjoy? Sure, but that's not, that is a delay in their plan. Adem Bona, he came back one more year only because of his injury. As the only, if he had been projected to be able to recover from that injury while he was still injured and go to the NBA, he would have gone to the NBA. It's just the way it is. It's more interesting now because it used to be you were choosing to go to the NBA over college, and you weren't necessarily making money in college. But you can. So you can make more money in college than you could as a late first round or early second round draft pick. And just to tell you how compelling it is for these guys to go to the NBA, they would willingly leave NIL money on the table and take a lot less to go to the NBA. It's just the way it is, guys. I mean, it doesn't make sense. We can, every time there's a situation like this, everyone trots out, including Dave and I, why it's rational to come back. But in their world, it's just a completely different world.
The Tunde one is particularly ridiculous, I think, from the outside perspective, because he has one obvious thing that he needs to improve on that can be improved. Like, it's not that he's, you know, got bad athleticism, or he's, you know, whatever, he's 6'1" trying to play the three or whatever. He's got decent size for the position. He is a very good athlete. He can't shoot.
He's a shooting guard in the NBA that
cannot shoot.
Who can't shoot?
You can get to become a better shooter. Norman Powell became a better shooter. You can become a better shooter. It can happen.
Norman Powell became a better shooter in the NBA.
Yeah, I get it.
That was not a good example. Tunde's listening to this and he's all, see, you just made my point.
But the thing is, like, Norman Powell, how many years in college did he spend?
I don't know. I can't remember. I think that was four. He came.
It was four.
He had been projected to a late first round pick, though, he probably would have gone.
Yeah. So I guess with Tunde, you look at it and you say, you stay in college another year and you actually work on your shooting, and like that's like the main thing you work on, you'll potentially be a lottery pick. And in the doing, you're probably going to make twice as much money as you're going to make your, maybe more, to be honest, than you're going to make in your first year in the NBA. That's the part that I think for a lot of people out there, it's just like, what's like, this doesn't, it's not just that it's like kind of irrational. It's like, this, it doesn't make any sense. Because
to us, to no, them, no, it absolutely does.
No, this is where Tracy, yes. This is where, yes, okay, theory of mind, like, yes, everyone has their own fight that they're doing. It makes no sense. Like, we can still talk about a 19-year-old making a bad decision. Like, and that's what this is. Because if he decides to go to the NBA, he's potentially going to be a second rounder. Like, he's potentially going to be a, yeah. And you know what happens to second rounders? They're often out of this entirely in, like, 3 years. And it's just,
or they
like,
get a two-way.
Or yeah, or but like then gone. And they're, you know, Amari Bailey in 3 years trying to, you know, find their way back to Grand Canyon State or whatever. So it's just like this is a situation where like I'm sure many people around him, but like I'm sure just like kind of in general are like, well, this is the rational point. You do this. But I don't know. We'll see.
You asked me who I thought the five would be if there's a five. So I'm going to ask you, Dave, if Tunde does not come to UCLA, who plays the three?
Don't ask me that.
You asked me.
Don't
this
ask
is
that.
Your question.
If and I'm telling you. Poll, and I'm
if
telling
we had a
you,
poll a bunch
that.
Of bros, who is the guy who hoards over the whole concept of the three position at UCLA, it would be.
Do you understand? Do you understand everyone out there who, you know, they call me a shill? They call me a UCLA men's basketball shill. They're like, oh, you're caping up for Mick Cronin. Do you understand that the nightmare roster is forming for me next year where Eric Daly is playing the three all year? Do you understand that?
I think it needs to bring it. They need to bring in one more four.
Do you understand how hard it is for me to contemplate that? Do you understand? Anywho, there's, I mean, look, I will go back to the first thing I said, which is I think that team next year, I like a lot of the individual players. I like a lot of the individuals that they're bringing in. I think it's, again, a roster that is just fundamentally missing pieces. You can talk around it and you can say, oh, yeah, sure. Maybe Jovic can play down at the three, or maybe he can play up at the five, or maybe Eric Freeney can play the three, or maybe, Matsuro will show that he can play the three or the five. Who knows? You can say all that stuff, and sure. And maybe Joe Filon comes in a lot more ready than he looked in the last high school game we saw of him, right? Maybe all of that is true, but also maybe it's not true, and maybe it ends up looking pretty bad. But the fundamental thing is you're trying to spackle over two positions in the starting lineup. I think in college
Well, wait. I want to say one thing, though. I am going to project that Xavier Booker is going to be better.
Sure.
As a senior. And be more five-ish.
Sure.
I think we saw his development throughout the year. I think, first, he's a talented kid. He's a good athlete. He wants to be better. First time really playing in the post as a 6'11 player. He's learning how to play. I think while we can say he's far off, he really is only like two rebounds a game and another half block shot from being the kind of post that you would have wanted to get in the transfer portal. So I think there's a chance, but even with Xavier Booker, let's say he's 11, 12 points a game, 6.5, 7 rebounds a game, and 1.5 block shots, which we'd all be ecstatic over to get that out of Xavier Booker. There still are just issues with the personnel.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that because I think a lot of people would say, you're not compensating for how much better these guys will be next year. And I think the one guy would be Xavier Booker.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true, but I think it's also, that's part of the spackle that I'm talking about. Because I think you can, that's saying Xavier Booker is going to be better and more of a true five next year. Sure, he was probably by the end of the year than he was at the beginning. So I would think, maybe a continued development arc. But you started off when I asked you who's a true five on this roster. You said first, Javonte Floyd, and then you said Brandon Williams. So look, yes, Xavier Booker can and has played the five, but is he, your ideal starting five on a good team? Probably not. At the three, you're not going to have somebody who's an ideal starting three. I'll just say that. And so it's spackle. I think in college basketball, you can spackle over one hole in your starting lineup. I think that's actually a lot easier than people make it out to be. They think you need to have a starting five that's like just perfectly, compensated for everyone. I think some of the best rosters are actually formed from having to work with imperfect pieces, like from having to kind of move guys around, and then suddenly you find a weird combination that actually works, and it ends up that because of the decision you have to make with your personnel, it forces the other team to adjust. I think that can happen a lot. You can end up with a big lineup where you've got some 6'9 guy who's playing the three now, and it creates a situation where it forces matchup issues with the other team as long as that 6'9 guy can move a little bit. Conversely, small ball. We always talk about small ball. A lot of times small ball is not a strategic decision. It's a personnel-driven decision because you don't have the right personnel to play in an ideal way for a basketball team where you've got like a true five and a true four and the whole thing. And so small ball develops from that. I think there's a way to do both of those things. I don't think you can do them at the same time because without a three, without a five, you're stuck playing a bunch of guys who would ideally be fours, or you're playing a guard up. And it ends up being, unless those guys are super athletes, like really, really good athletes, where you can get by with a couple of guys who are like, forwards at the four and the five, and then three guard lineup, you're at a real deficit. And even in that situation, you're at a deficit, but like there's going to be rebounding deficits. There's going to be defensive deficits. Like there's, and it's, it won't be as good a shooting lineup as last year. So there's just, there's some kind of fundamental missing pieces at this point.
And let's just keep a, there's a chance they're not done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if they don't get Tunde. So we just want to throw that out too.
Yeah, no. And there's still, you know, irons in the fire just, as of right now, you know, definitely some missing pieces. Okay, Tracy.
The thing that's kind of fun for all of us now as bros, we were kind of in a, I'd say we were out in the desert when it came to following high school football recruiting for a while.
Would you? Why?
There was just really nothing to follow.
Huh. Why was that? Did the high school stop playing football or something?
Actually, they did.
For a little bit, yeah.
And it almost, we've all gone, I'm speaking for everyone now. It was almost stunning how we had to get back into this. Like Bob Chesney and his staff landed, they started recruiting. We were so used to, I mean, years of this, of not paying attention or not really being invested. And then some things started happening in high school recruiting. We're all, wow, hold on. Then started suddenly paying attention, and then they start racking up all these commitments. And now they're ranked 12th in the country, according to the Rivals industry rankings. They've had one official visit weekend. They've got three more by the end of June. And you know, Dave, they have 19 commitments. They probably 25 to 27, maybe it matters how many, you know, who's still available. But that's probably it. You look over the class and you say, well, okay, they're done at running back. They're done at linebacker. And then if you talk wide receiver, defensive line, cornerback, safety, if they just, you know, pulled up the tents right now, you'd go, wow, this is a really good class. And they're not. They're still recruiting some guys, because there are some guys they really like still at those positions. So God bless them. That's amazing. If there's one position that you'd say they really need to still fill out, it would be offensive line, and more specifically offensive tackle. That kind of happened. It became a little bit more dire when Jackson Hill decommitted. He's the offensive tackle prospect from West Hills Chaminade. And, you know, everyone likes to blame kids for, but lifelong Notre Dame fan, Notre Dame comes in late and offers him. I mean, let's forgive the kid. lifelong place where he wanted to play and he got the offer. I get
no it. Forgiveness.
Over the course of those official visit weekends, they have quite a few. They have nine offensive linemen who will have taken and will take official visits, and six of those are offensive tackle prospects. It's clear what their priority is here. And I went back, I've spent a couple of days really watching a lot of film on the guys who are going to take official visits. There might be more. I mean, Dave, recruiting is
fluid.
What would you call it? It is
fluid.
It's fluid. So they could add more guys who might come in on official visits. Also another caveat, perhaps a solution to the offensive tackle, a little bit of a need there would be Jackson Roper, who is being projected as an inside offensive lineman. He's about 6'4", 285, 290. Not ideal size, or he is a little bit long, but probably not ideal length for a high-level P4 offensive tackle. But he's got the feet and athleticism of one. So perhaps he becomes an offensive tackle on the next level. So there is that possibility.
He's never beating the Xavier Suofilo allegations.
No, he's not Xavier. I mean, I really like Jackson Roper on tape. Xavier Suofilo was, I remember watching on tape.
And cat.
It was kind of weird. He was a cat. He just moved like a cat. You know, like cats have those bodies that just flop everywhere. That was Xavier Suofilo. So there are guys, though, and it's very interesting. As I've been scouting these guys, they're all three-star guys. A lot of them are high three stars. They're all really similar, too. A lot of them are big guys, 6'6", 280 to 290. Kind of not completely filled out. You could see them add 15 to 20 more pounds. Smart guys, like guys who could get into Stanford, originally offered from Ivy League guys, so good fits at UCLA. You always, you know, offensive linemen, you always want them to be smart. Good run blockers, Dave. They all seem to be better run blockers than necessarily pass blockers, but really well, like Jackson Hill when we saw him. What stood out about Jackson Hill was the technique was advanced. He was a well-coached player. All of these guys, they're all like cut from same cloth. It's really, really interesting. But the one guy who kind of stood out, and I'm kind of giving away my story, was Kyle Nabrotsky. He is a three-star guy. And what weekend is he coming in? He's coming in June 5th and 7th. He's from Brentwood, Tennessee. And you would say, well, first off, taking a look at him, he's a former tight end. He's 6'6". He was like, if you look at his photos, Dave, like his profile photo, he looks like a basketball player. He's got this thin face. On the profile photo, he's only recently started to fill out, like probably in the last 4 or 5 months. He's probably, I've seen him listed at 280, maybe. Still, I've seen, looked at photos of him and watched moving in camps and things, and he's still thin, but that tight end kind of movement, just quick, doesn't have to settle himself before he moves, that kind of quickness, he definitely has that. So it's interesting. I've liked him the best of the guys I looked at so far. He might be the biggest project too, because you'll have to get bigger and physical and gain some weight. He's got visits to Virginia Tech, Oklahoma State, BYU. But wouldn't you know it, Dave? This is a guy in SEC country who does have offers from Vanderbilt, Tennessee, some other, I think a couple other SECs. And then now Michigan swoops in and offers him. So I think he's trying to figure out an official visit with Michigan. If I had to put one guy at the top of the list of being able to scout and evaluate these guys, it would be him, which is funny because he might be the least ranked or rated among the guys who are coming in. So I think they have to get two of these guys to really fill out the class the way they want, even though, again, caveat, Jackson Roper might be a 6'4 tackle. So there you go. Really interesting. But Dave, again, like I started off, this is really fun. I mean, I came into this business as an evaluator, and I haven't really been doing that much in football for a while, and now I'm back, and it's fun. Dave thinks I'm weird.
I don't think you're weird.
Yeah, you do.
I do.
You didn't put up much fight.
I didn't put up much of a fight. Yeah, I don't think you're weird, because if I thought you were weird, then I would think everyone on our message board is weird too, and I don't think that. I love you all.
But we're weird, but you love us.
Yeah.
You can get sucked in too. I know you can. There are times when you start talking about recruiting and evaluating and looking at them, and that is the fun part. It's not the recruiting story. It's looking at them and projecting them as college players, which is the most fun by far. I saw LeBron James when he was 15 years old. He looked 27, but that was fun. You know, this is the fun part of this job, I think. And I think it's what you said. All the bros find this fun too.
They do. They do. I'm the one who doesn't. No, but I do too. I mean, it's
you're a secret evaluator, appreciate looking at prospect guy.
I just never want to admit it. It's more, I mean, it's certainly more fun than our friend Chipper era. I never want to hear a line like big people beat up little people ever again in my life. I don't want UCLA. Look, if you want to go get a guy who is coming out of the Colorado School of Mines, okay, because maybe he was misevaluated out of high school. But if you're competing with the Colorado School of Mines for a guy, maybe just rethink things. Maybe just take a step back and be like, hey, are we doing the right thing here? Because nobody else is thinking the same thing. It's one thing to be what's the phrase? A heterodox thinker, you know, somebody who's zigging when other people are zagging. But if you are the only one zigging, you should also consider the possibility, because there's also this effect called the Dunning-Kruger syndrome, which is essentially this idea that if you are actually wholly incompetent in a certain skill set, you are unaware of your incompetence and in fact will be convinced of your own competence because you are not actually smart enough or in tune enough with that area of skill.
Is that every human on the planet?
No, it's not. Self-awareness is actually the hallmark of people who are competent. This is very common. When you are finding yourself the only one doing a certain thing, I'm not saying you're wrong. But I'm saying you should at least have a moment of reflection where you say, hey, am I doing the right thing? Is everyone else wrong or am I stupid? And if you can acknowledge the moments in your life when you, in fact, are stupid, you will have achieved enlightenment, all right? Because that's the most important thing in life. If you are to achieve at the level that you want to achieve at, is to know when you are being stupid.
Stupidity leads to enlightenment.
It does. It does. As our friend Bob Chesney says, the greatest, what is it? The greatest success is from whatever, managed failure. And the greatest failure is from mismanaged success. That's what it is. That's what it is.
Do we see a pyramid of success coming with Bob Chesney's name on it soon?
Maybe so. Maybe so. But anyway, big important thing in life. When you're stupid, knowing when you're stupid, because then you can admit failure and then you can.
Everyone's stupid at some point.
We're all dumb. We're all dumb. I feel stupid on this podcast a lot of times.
Well, I was going to say this is a really good lead in to how I like to finish this off. Bros are always clamoring for, well, what happens on an official visit? What do they experience? What do they do? Our guy who we are more in awe of every day, Tracy.
I would say enamored with.
Okay. I'm in awe. You've got a crush.
I'm enamored.
He wrote a story of what everyone has always wanted. And let's be real. You couldn't write this a few years ago. What would it have said, Dave?
They arrived at the barracks at 0600. They had a meal of gruel.
They were thrown.
They were worked out for 10 hours.
They had to put water on the meal for it to expand.
They had to They had to pee in cups and have their urine tested.
Their mothers too on the official visit.
They were then showered with a hose and then lights out at 2100. Reveille played at 0530.
And then they got a tour.
And then they were sent home.
They had to push the golf cart up the hill.
And then they were sent home on a prison bus.
We should do that now. We should do that story. TM wrote the story of stories, which you guys have always wanted. And I'm, if anyone ever asks what happens on an official visit again,
I will say, I think the Chesney era, it's gotten even more insane than it always was in the pre eras, because they gave these dudes a menu of options. You want to go to Dodger Stadium, or do you want to go to Hollywood, or do you want to go to Topgolf?
Yeah. We were always thinking we wanted this story, and we could have pieced it together, but it was just, like I said, most of the time it was a little lame. We'd have to go back to the Jim Mora era, but this was over the top more so than Jim Mora. But Jim Mora didn't have these resources to have this, to do this.
No, but they would go to like Chicago or something really nice. Yeah, but
this is insane what they did on this official visit.
Like we've always been talking about, you need to take advantage of, you know, location and all the cool things. And then they took advantage of the location and all of the cool things. Like they did everything.
I was talking to some friends of mine, and this is where you get spoiled so quickly. I was saying, yeah, I don't see the visit to Dodger Stadium. I mean, I get Dave Roberts, I get all that. Not related, I mean, to really UCLA. I mean, and my friend said, are you effing kidding me? If they had done this at any other time, we all would have been impressed. And I go, that's true. It's true. I'm spoiled.
This is, I think, visit weekend. No, we got to divulge here, Tracy. We got to put all cards on the table. What baseball team do you root for?
The anti-Dodgers.
The San Francisco Giants.
Went to a Giants-Dodger game last week.
And if you had to pick an LA area team, what was the team that you watched growing up?
Well, that's because I grew up in Orange County. Because I'm gonna say this strictly: the Dodgers today, this Dodger team. While you can make the fact that they're the best team money can buy, throw that out. Everyone, believe me, I got enough Dodger fans who can present a very valid argument of why that shouldn't be an argument. This is a really likable Dodger team. These guys, I like Mookie Betts. I really do. I mean, there are guys on this team that you just like. Back in the day, I grew up in the 60s, and the Dodgers, sorry guys, the Dodgers were hateable. Those guys were, Steve Garvey, I just always knew there was no one who could be so Ken Doll perfect. There was something wrong, and voila. There was just a lot of, Davey Lopes, there's just something wrong with those guys. These Dodgers today, I have to admit, I respect them and actually like them. But I was branded a Giant fan from originally growing up in San Francisco. I grew up with Willie Mays and Willie McCovey. If you grew up on Willie Mays, there's no way you can go away from that. Willie Mays was the most watchable, admirable baseball player ever to watch. If you ever watch Willie Mays play, wow. So no, I can't ever come off of that. So yeah, I admit it, but I just want those Dodger fans out there to realize. And you go to Dodger Stadium, those Dodger uniforms that are blue and gold, you know, that the fans have, that I think the Dodgers have worn, damn, those are really good looking uniforms. They should switch to blue and gold.
They should switch to blue and gold.
Yeah. Let's talk and to I got a bobblehead. The Star Wars bobblehead. What's his name?
Which one?
The little guy.
Yoda?
Like, yeah.
Grogu.
They had a Grogu bobblehead.
Baby Yoda.
Which was fun. Anyway.
Apparently that movie's terrible.
Really? Really?
I can't tell if you're no-selling that or if you're being sincere.
My son will be disappointed. He loves Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah. No, apparently it's awful. I mean, it's a Star Wars movie, so...
Pedro Pascal, what he did, that he went to Disneyland and they had like a Mandalorian guy walking around. He took off the helmet and it was him, and the fans were all, oh my God, it's Pedro Pascal. And now it's coming out that it was 100% staged and they already knew. So
everything's staged. Everything's off. Everything's either staged or AI. Nothing's real anymore.
Don't get Dave talking about AI. Speaking of stage,
get me talking about AI.
Staging this official visit. I mean, Dave, let's go over it a little. They went to the Rose Bowl where they play their football games. They actually went to it, which was cool. Laid out a blue carpet. You know, it was really funny as some of the recruits, when they're walking down the blue carpet and all the coaches, like this coach was there to meet us. And yeah, that was Cade McNown, not a coach. But you know, Eric Kendricks, just there. I think Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr, I think these kids do recognize. So maybe, key to have key to have those guys there. You know, they had breakfast at the 50 yard line. Just pretty amazing. Went to Dodger Stadium. A lot of the kids came away saying the breakfast at the beach house really kind of sealed it because it kind of felt really Californian. But a lot of the kids also said that even with all that, the connections, the energy first, which helped, was a holdover from practice, but the energy that they felt on the visit, and then the family atmosphere between the players and the coaches and the players and the players, they really felt that. And to take advantage of UCLA's local advantages, they went and met with an agency. They went to the offices of UTA and listened to UTA agents talk about the opportunities, which kind of a no-brainer. You think they might, UCLA should have thought about maybe doing that, but no, never before. So really amazing. And now, Dave, my expectations are high. This next weekend, they can't do the same stuff. They've got to take it to another level. And I completely expect Bob Chesney and Derek Ray to probably take it to another level. Like, do something else, which kind of...
A helicopter tour of Yosemite.
It doesn't necessarily top what they did last week, but equals it in a different way, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think... Look, I think reinventing the wheel every weekend could be tough. I think, like, I like the idea of, like, a menu of options. I think it'll be hard to do Dodger Stadium again because I think, you know, some of these weekends they're going to have home games. And so, you know, what do you do then? I don't think there would be equal enticement to, like, I'm imagining them doing this at Angel Stadium and, like, nobody'd give a shit.
I remember one of the big things, I just have to say this. I don't think we ever reported on this. Back in Jim Mora's era, when Miles Jack took his official visit, Mora, remember, had done studio work, television, Fox. He brought him by the Fox studios because Miles Jack had expressed that he had interest in doing that. And that blew away Miles Jack. We thought that was such a genius move on Mora's part because, you know, that's the kind of stuff you should do on official visits to impress players. And it's kind of like similar with UTA, what UCLA and Bob Chesney did. So UCLA's back taking advantage
of
its advantages.
Yeah. And, you know, this is the advantage that we always talk about. It is location. It is the quality of the university. It's the quality of the alumni. And all of that is a natural advantage for talent acquisition. So UCLA is 12th right now in recruiting. Is that still correct?
Yes.
Yeah. That's, look, I'm not saying they should always be 12th, but, like, this should be always a top 20 recruiting program. It's located in Los Angeles. And look, I know a lot of people have complications with LA and California and the whole thing. There's a reason that, like, I don't know, 3% of, like, the entire population of the United States lives here. Like, there's a reason that that's the case. And it's because it's really cool. It's because the weather's awesome. It's because, like, there's a ton of stuff here. So take advantage of those things. That's what UCLA should do. It's what USC does. UCLA should do it, too. And if you do it...
UCLA's in a better part of town to really take advantage of it.
Yeah. There's a reason on, like, an average Friday night why you see a bunch of USC people hanging out in Westwood, going to Didi Reese. Or at least that was true, God, 20 years ago when I was in college.
It could be again, Dave.
Damn. I'm so old.
Make Westwood great again.
Wow.
But yeah. And again, you just, I have to admit, there are certain things about us doing this job where we don't, Dave and I guess some people think we do say I told you so, or we were right. I don't think we do it nearly that much, but we have been saying, If UCLA ever started to, first, if it ever got a staff and invested in a staff who could really recruit, the kind of recruiting results we'd see would blow everyone away first. Secondly, in combination with that, if they ever won at just a bit of a level, recruiting would then go to a whole nother level. Dave, if they just win like 7 games, he's selling this on, I mean, he does have a great track record. We're talking about Coach Chesney. Well, every level he's been, he's won. And at this point, like that article I wrote last week, it's almost impossible. You'd be shockingly just shocked if he didn't win at some level of success at UCLA. But if he does it now with the kind of basis he's established in recruiting, damn, recruiting is going to get to be a lot of fun. Just, I mean, we are going to go back as for so many years, we were primarily like a recruiting site. That's what this started as. And then Dave and I kind of transitioned in, you know, we should maybe do more about the programs, coverage of the teams. And now it's back, Dave. We've got full coverage. Now we've given you all this coverage of the teams that we can't take away. And now we're giving you more coverage of recruiting once again. Which, Dave, what kind? We're giving them so much value on the site, right?
So, Tracy, do you know how much value we're giving them? Hundreds and hundreds of dollars. But, right now, right this instant, Friday, May 22nd, you can get it all for the next 3 months for just $1. That's right. 3 months of coverage of all these official visit weekends, the end of basketball transfer recruiting, however this thing ends up, all of our preseason content. We're going to start doing a 30 most important players countdown here pretty soon. We're going to have fall camp previews. We're going to have season previews. We're going to have all of that. You'll get it all.
And interviews. Off-season interviews like you've never seen.
Like you've never seen before. All for $1.
Exclusive to Bruin Report.
Yeah, but you gotta sign up. This deal's not gonna last, everyone. It's not gonna be here past May 31st. All right. So
Don't be a fan later.
As Dorian Thompson Robinson once said so eloquently, do not be a fan later. Be a fan now. Sign up for Bruin.
Give Dorian a lot of credit. I mean, we were a little critical of Dorian at times.
Were fans a little bit later.
We were fans a little later. I saw him at a basketball game and I didn't know how I'd react. And, you know, you can always tell by someone's immediate reaction. They can recover and then be nice. He saw me, his immediate reaction was like, "Hey, Tracy, how you doing?" And gave me a hug. To me, that was his genuine feeling. That first impulse really went a long way for me. So maybe he just forgot. But we were a little bit of fans later. Liked him as a prospect. But then,
we're fans later.
Kind of showed me a lot right there.
But if Chip had run a real offense, maybe we would have been fans earlier. We don't blame you, Dorian. Mm-mm. We blame Chip.
So Dave, we always think sometimes we're not going to do it. That was a great show.
Was it?
I think so.
I think I was maybe a touch negative early. You know, was it maybe a little bit?
You know, Dave, in our work, there are people, no matter what we say, there'll be people who call us shills, and there'll be people who just say we're far overly critical for the same piece of content. It happens all the time. It's quite often where I write something and I get a private message. You're shamefully negative, and then someone on the same piece will say, "I can't believe you won't take it another level and be more critical. You're a shill."
You know what? I actually want to take people behind the curtain here because this is an important point. Do you want to know what's annoying right now for me, Tracy?
Uh-oh.
We can't write a recap of transfer recruiting. We can't write a recap, a put to bed of this basketball recruiting class. Why? Because it never ends. It doesn't end. It doesn't have an end point. You know, we used to be able to put our recruiting class to bed and just say, okay, it's done in April. Okay, we can just be done and the roster is finalized. This one's never ending. And so, like, I'm sitting here and I'm like, oh, well, maybe they'll still get this guy or that guy. Cause I don't know. Like, you don't know. No one knows. Like, there could be irons in the fire in a million different places. You don't know. And it's just like this, it'll come to a point where it's finalized and that's going to be in like July. And then we're going to be able to finally write it. And it's going to sound ridiculous at that point. Anyway.
He was smiling the entire time he went on that rant. So that must have felt really good.
It's just people are like, well, why aren't you writing about the transfer recruiting class? Because it's not done. I don't know. if I wrote about it right now, I would say, hey, this isn't very good.
And then something else happens and we'd say, okay, forget everything we just wrote.
Right. This isn't very good. They're missing on two pieces. What if Tunde says, you know what? I'm not going to the NBA. I'm going to UCLA next week. Then suddenly it looks a lot better. Are they still missing a five? Sure. But as I said, you can spackle over one position in the starting lineup. You can't spackle over two. So, you know, still uncertain.
Are you going to use the word spackle in the title of this broadcast?
I kind of like spackle. I kind of like it it's evocative.
Yeah.
It gets the people going.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. That was enough spackle for a day, Dave.
That sounds dirty. The way you said it sounded dirty.
Spackle for a day, Dave.
I don't know. Something about the way you say spackle sounds worse than the way I say spackle.
You're the one. You're the sexual innuendo guy. I just pile on.
I didn't like the way you said spackle. The way you said spackle made me uncomfortable.
Okay.
You got to stop recording in the nude. All right. I'm sick of this.
This is the first time you've ever complained.
Look, I've made it known to HR. Unfortunately, HR is
us.
All right.
Okay.
For Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online. We'll talk to you again next time.
See y'all.